The Guardian.
Hello everyone, I'm Max Rushton. I know you all couldn't cope without the pod yesterday, but thank God we waited to bring you our reaction to the biggest game of the season in the best league in the world. As Elton Wellesby once said, what a goal, what a game, what a season. And after we desperately try to get 5 minutes of interesting comment on Manchester United Chelsea, we will also answer the following. Crisis at Man City as they are humbled by minnows Cardiff City. Spurs and Liverpool enjoy equally underwhelming 100% starts, but which one will win the title? On the pod today, we'll all remember where we were when we watched the game last night. Radio's Barry Glendenning, where were you?
I was in the green room at the BT Sports Studios with Patrick Barkley, top journalist, and former professional footballer Nigel Spackman.
Brazil's Fernando Duarte, where were you?
I was at home watching on that official streaming thing, but I almost fell asleep a couple of times.
You know? Official stream? Did you do an illegal download, Fernando?
Downloads? I don't know what you're talking about. I don't believe in illegal downloads. I believe in promotion of an artist's work. Piracy is actually free publicity for these guys. Besides,
aren't you supporting organized crime?
No, I'm not supporting organized crime. I mean, I watch Sky. So that would be actually organized crime as well, isn't it? Anyway, so I was watching it, almost fell asleep, perhaps because I was too tired. I had just driven 300 miles from Liverpool, so I was knackered. You know, pretty disappointing, and what can we say?
This is just an introduction. I don't want your review of the game yet. Here's James Horncastle. Where were you?
I was in my flat, the top of Notting Hill Carnival, and there's people getting glassed outside my door, which was kind of more interesting to see the armed police gather than the game.
There's much controversy about some England cricketers potentially weeing on the oval. Did anyone wee in your front garden?
Well, I was at a raised point that I could have possibly done that.
You could have Monty Palisade anybody.
But I was above that, so...
You didn't wee on them?
I didn't wee on them,
oh,
no.
Man.
I think that's a good thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think it's important you... Don't wee on someone that doesn't want to be weed on. Believe you can pay for that sort of thing, but that was a long time ago.
That's what they say in Brazil when they build all the new stadiums there. You're not going to get showered by piss anymore, as people used to do, because it was so difficult to go to the toilets. We'd just piss in a cup and then throw the cup a couple of rows down. It used to be brilliant, but now we lost that atmosphere.
That's why I never go to music concerts, or whatever they're called these days, because occasionally you'd be at one and then someone would just... throw an unnamed liquid
gigs
across the room. Why would you do
called gigs?
Why would you? Thanks, Barry. Why would you ever want that possibility to happen?
That happened to Mark Cavendish during the Tour de France, didn't it? He just got a bottle full of urine thrown at him. I mean, if you're going to have 2 hours of long endurance, and that's you don't want to be covered in salty yellow liquid.
I agree with you. Last gig you all went to, and we will talk about Man U Chelsea, which will be less interesting than this. Fernando?
I went to see the damn Beatles at the Adelphi in Liverpool as part of the Adelphi All-Nighter, this amazing band. I mean, they live in Scotland. I don't know if they're all Scottish, but they do like 7 different Beatles concerts in a row. So they will do like the white album dressed as how the Beatles looked in 1968 and etc. I was lucky to see the Star Club one when they all dressed... like with the leather jackets, etc. And it's uncanny, the impressions, etc.
So hang on, a covers band, is what you're saying?
Oh, yeah.
So I'm going to see Bjorn again.
Nah, not Bjorn again. I hate ABBA. Okay. You know, I have issues with that band, hence my name, etc. But now the last proper gig I went to see was the Black Keys at the O2.
Okay, yeah. No,
the Stones at Hyde Park.
You get some credit points, Barry.
God, I'm struggling to remember. I nearly went to see the Wu-Tang Clan recently.
That can't be the gig you last went to. Yeah. You almost went to
I almost gig. Went to see the Wu-Tang Clan. Actually, wait, one of your colleagues was in the group that I almost went with.
Oh, right.
TV's Hayley McQueen.
Oh, right.
And
I did a name drops, Barry.
Oh, sorry. I've got three in already. Well, does Paddy Barkley count? Mogwai, I think. But that was ages ago.
No idea who that is.
Why are you such a hipster, man?
James, your last gig?
Japandroids. That's a hipster kind of thing. Japandroids, yeah.
You got a hipster last name and you got a hipster picture.
It's a Lincolnshire village. That's
you're not outing yourself like Baz is doing these days, I mean.
Thanks for asking. I think it was Noel Gallagher at the O2. But yeah, and it was good actually. You know, I liked the piano arrangements he did of his Oasis hits, which was part of my youth. Right, look, we better talk about the football. Manchester United 0, Chelsea 0. We were saying off air, there will be some pious people on this blog and elsewhere going, it was a really entertaining game of football. But let's be brutally honest, it was rubbish. Where do we start? Jose picked no strikers. Is it all his fault?
Well, I guess he for all the build-up you had, and for all Moyes saying, look, I've picked RVP, I've picked Rooney, Welbeck and Valencia. Jose, yeah, okay, he didn't pick a striker, but saying, yeah, I've picked four number 10s, essentially, in Schürrle, Hazard, Oscar and De Bruyne. But, you know, I mean...
I think your voice just broke. Congratulations. Oh,
yeah. I'm growing a beard now as well. My point is that they, for all the bravado, for all the talk that they put out attacking teams, you know, essentially they're two coaches who, you know, if you can't win, don't lose. And I think the only people who lost last night were the people who were watching, because it was very dull.
Isn't this why Abramovich and Jose fell out in the first place, that he wasn't playing exciting football?
Well, I think that's what people tend to forget in midst all the frenzied brown nosing and celebrating and cheerleading of Jose Mourinho by certain quarters of the media, is that his Chelsea team was often horrendous to watch. And in big games, they often played super defensively. They weren't as bad as they have been in the past last night in that regard. But once you saw the lineup, it was difficult to know where any excitement was going to come from.
Do we conclude that Jose doesn't rate any of his centre-forwards, or he would have done this anyway?
He might be trying to make a point. Look, I have no strikers. I need strikers. I want to buy Rayton Rooney. And this was his veiled message to Roman Abramovich.
Not very veiled, is it? I mean, it's sort of it's really unsubtle, don't you think? I mean, is that...
I think that a lot of people seem to think he's made a few points, sort of poignant points recently. There's that, like, I've got no strikers. This is an open invitation, Wayne. We need you, or something like that. Or, you know, just like... pinching Willian from Spurs, not because they need him, but just because they can, you know, just to kind of cog a snook at them. But it's quite an expensive point to make.
Was that him, or was that the owner? I'm not quite sure that who actually decided to do that one on Spurs. I've heard stories, and especially talking to people connected to the player, that it wasn't pretty much like his decision or that Mourinho decided to give him a phone call. The thing happened at the higher offices, and, you know, Russian club, Russian owners, etc. But I don't know. I mean, I also didn't see the point to bring in this guy when they actually need somebody up front, to be honest about.
Spurs fans obviously very angry, even though they can't be that angry because they'd only nicked him off Liverpool like the day before, but criticising Willian for just chasing the money.
Just remember, it's not his decision sometimes. These guys are all kind of like manipulated, and sometimes very blatantly by agents. I'm not saying that agents are evil, but agents have very strong influence on these guys. Example number one, Bernard. Do you really think he wanted to go to Shakhtar Donetsk? No. He wanted to go to Porto or to Arsenal. And I know this because he said that in front of a lot of people in Brazil during the Confederations Cup warm-up, etc. But also, somebody offers much more money to his club, and the agents look at it, okay, it's more commission to me, etc. So he's kind of like convinced to go somewhere else. Another case is the case of Luis Gustavo, who is not going to play in the Champions League to play for Wolfsburg because, according to what I've heard, because of wages. And also because the company that handles his affairs pretty much not put pressure, but kind of like nudge him into staying in the Bundesliga. I know, it's these guys are not acting on their own. Especially, these are very humble people that sometimes haven't even finished school. So they are surrounded by an army of minders and friends and etc. Look at Neymar, there's six people living in his house. They're not his family. And, you know, and sometimes these decisions are going to happen. And unfortunately, the player gets the flag. I'm not saying that Willian all of a sudden didn't get cold feet and said, no, I actually want to join Chelsea. But immediately, Brandon, it was a player's decision. It's quite wrong in this era we live in. Agents have too much power over these guys.
Can we talk about Cardiff Man City, please? City was so good against Newcastle. By all accounts, Cardiff was so average against West Ham that nobody saw this coming. Or did any of you have a sneaky feeling that Cardiff would win this game?
Nope, I didn't.
No, and I still think they're going to go down at the end of the season.
Really?
Yeah. It's one of those things. Oh, yes, we beat the city. Accidentally, Joe Hart needs to basically lose a few hours of sleep this week because it was his fault. And probably a game the city turned off. You know, all these big teams are actually kind of like warming up, putting pieces together, etc. I don't think we're going to see any revolutions in the Premiership this year. And certainly I don't believe Cardiff is going to stay up.
Can we give Cardiff any credit, Fernando? Or just say it was luck? Or just bad Joe Hart?
Listen, I'm not saying that they play bad. You don't score three against City. You don't win a game against City if it didn't play well. But let's say they're going to play 10 times. City probably going to win 9.
So, and City probably won't have Lescott and Javi Garcia as centre-backs, which I think was... they're missing Kompany, they're missing Nastasic. Zabaleta didn't have his best day, I think. He was complaining. Well, he wasn't complaining. He was pointing out afterwards that...
Mark Fraser-Campbell. They're
making a transition from zonal to man-marking, apparently, which they're adjusting to.
The transitional phase is bad, isn't it?
So, I don't know. I think it's probably a bad day at the office.
I just thought man-marking is a lot easier than zonal marking, and if you're a very experienced defender, I mean, you just pick... You know who your man is, and you don't let him get away from you. But Zabaleta let
And you don't
Fraser
have a transition.
Campbell.
You don't have a transition Campbell stage, is. Do you? You don't go, well, we'll half zonal, half man mark for a couple of weeks, and then we'll go full on man marking.
No. Under Mancini, they were zonal marking, but now they're man marking. They're not
Listen,
doing
yes,
a mixture.
But they should be able to work that out.
No. Several situations. You remember, you train for the whole season with things in your head. Once you move things around, you might get complicated. Just one little nick, one little change in the scheme. You might get out of position, out of your frame of mind. So imagine the guy played the whole of last season under some kind of system, and for example, he looked at people, or etc. It's a fine tuning. It's a finer tuning than it seems sometimes.
I think you're giving them players too much credit there, aren't you? If you've got a man mark, you've just got a man mark, you know. Whenever anyone who's played any level of football knows... Yeah,
that's your man.
You take your man.
Grab his shirt.
And you don't let him score. And, yeah. if he does score, you blame someone else. Yeah, as soon as it's exactly. just happened.
I guess if there's any uncertainty there, so that you've got two centre-backs, one of which who is a defensive midfielder doing a makeshift job there. The goalkeeper has been out of form for some time. So that's not going to give them as much confidence as it once did. I think Cardiff are very good at set pieces. They were last year. I think they scored something like 33 goals from set pieces. So I think it shouldn't necessarily come as a surprise that Cardiff were able to at least score. But, I mean, win was, still something.
They deserve a huge amount of credit for it. And, I mean, I was a bit bewildered when Sunderland sold Fraser Campbell. Quite cheaply as well. I think it was less than £1 million, 600,000 or something like that. But and I hope he has a good season, because they will need goals from him to stay up. But if I was a Manchester City fan, I wouldn't be too worried about losing the game, but I would be very concerned about Joe Hart's form, because he's just making so many mistakes that it's getting to the point where he's almost unpickable.
If you're an England fan, you'd be worried as well, eh?
Well...
No, you're kidding.
He gave me a Jager bomb over the summer. There you are.
Joe Hart.
Yes, he did.
Did he?
Yes. I didn't really want
to. Did he drop it?
No, his handling was very good.
Why did he give you a Jager bomb?
He said, you have to have one. And I was like, I don't really want one. I'm 34. He went, just one. I went, okay. So Man United-Chelsea draw, Man City lose. How interesting is this for, say, Spurs and Liverpool? James, you were at the Spurs game on Sunday. They have 100% record. Both games pretty similar, where they created a few chances, should have won more comfortably than they did, but had to rely on a penalty.
Both games decided by penalties. I think Spurs actually showed some... they look a very, very solid team. Capu, who they signed from Toulouse, I mean, the platform what he gives them. I mean, he's one of those players who just sits in front of the defence and just... He's like a massive shield, essentially. And so Paulinho and Dembele were able to get forward quite a lot. Paulinho gets in the box so often. Should have scored himself. I mean, it's quite interesting, like watching Soldado, because he doesn't he didn't seem to get involved in the game that much. Most of the threats were coming from Paulinho or Capu. So
is he clever running off the ball? What, £26 million?
He's not obviously just a fox in the box, but it was quite interesting that they didn't seem to be using him. Maybe he's still adjusting, although he has scored in both Premier League games, from the penalty spot, and also scored
a couple in Europe.
So he's had a very good start.
And did Sandro come on?
Sandro did come on looking like Mr. T. He had shaved his head, had an amazing beard. He did come on for Dembele, but they look good. I mean, I think they're just they will explode. Once Bale leaves and they bring in the players they want, particularly Lamella. I think they will. They'll be a fantastic team.
Give us a 30-second review of Lamella as a player. We can't remember if you did it last week, so can you do it this week?
He scored 15 goals for Roma last season. He's only 21. He can play either as a number 10 or on the right. He's lightning quick, and he's very sort of elegant on the ball as well. So, in terms of not a like-for-like Bale replacement, but potentially, I think Lamella, there's no reason why Lamella can't even be better than Bale. I mean, he's a few years younger than him. I mean, I'm very surprised that Roma are willing to let him go, even at, 30, 35 million?
And Roy Hodgson was looking at Andros Townsend as well.
He was excellent. I mean, Villas-Boas was saying afterwards that he gave them the light and spark to their play. I mean, it was quite interesting. That was a subplot of the game, was, there were various elements where you thought they missed Bale. There was a free kick. Nasser Chadli stood up for it instead of Bale, and he floated over the top, and Swansea fans were singing, "Where's your care of Bale?" and all that sort of thing. And likewise with Townsend, he gave them real kind of sort of direct running, penetration. Obviously, he won one penalty by kind of kicking the back of John Joe Shelby's leg, but should have had another one. But he was very, very good indeed.
In a word, would you say Andros Townsend is better than Andy Townsend?
Does he have a tactics truck? I don't know.
Fernando, there are rumours that Spurs are going for Hulk as well. Do you know anything about this? And would it be good? Producer Ben says, everyone says Hulk's rubbish.
But Producer Ben is... Well, he's talking nonsense. Hulk is a fundamental player for Brazil these days. He's the battering ram that helps a lot of the team. I'm tired of singing his praises. I've done this here like a couple of times. He is a much better player than people reckon. I mean, in the Confederations Cup, he almost scored a brilliant back flick that would have made all the YouTubes, that guy, 101 goals, so that basically had an orgasm of that, because it was one... He missed it by a whisker, and it would be a goal that even Neymar hasn't scored yet. But anyway, the deal has been on the cards for a while. Villas-Boas worked with him at Porto, wants him to come, but it depended on the Bale situation. Obviously, when you see that AS Monaco didn't manage to secure this guy, it shows that the situation is more complicated. Although I've also heard that the fact that the AS Monaco owner is a guy not very friendly with the Putin regime also might have played in a decision for Zenit to decide not to sell. He could come to Spurs for the right money, etc. So, but he won't going to come cheap, because apparently Monaco offered 60 million euro for him. That's more than Barcelona paid for Neymar, for example. But I think as a player that would have a field day in the Premiership with that left foot of his, Jesus Christ.
Liverpool beat Barry's tip for the title Aston Villa 1-0. You must have been surprised, Barry.
Oh, you're going to run and run with that one, aren't you? Yeah, I saw this game. Villa were weird. They looked almost scared in the first half. They were very, very timid, chasing shadows a lot of the time. Couldn't get the ball. And then, I'm not sure what the tea lady put in their halftime brews, but they were completely changed second half, and could well have... got a draw or even won it. I think on the balance of play, Liverpool probably deserved the win. A lovely, lovely goal from Daniel Sturridge. And once again, they were kind of hanging on by the skin of their teeth towards the end. But they're the kind of games they'd lost or drawn last season. And this year, so far, they're winning them.
Is Daniel Sturridge the best English striker from England in England who could play for England right now?
Ricky Lambert.
I think he's been great. If he's the only guy to play for England, he should be like number one. I don't know. I love Rooney for England. He's been unbelievable. But also he needs to play. And I do like Welbeck as well. Welbeck has this fluidity of movement that I find really, really interesting. And I totally agree with Barry. Those games Liverpool have lost a draw last season, and as a supporter, I'm really pleased to see things clicking in. I love the fact that Sturridge and Coutinho almost have this telepathic thing going on in terms of the way they link up. I was very skeptical about Coutinho's ability to thrive in the Premiership, and I'm happy to be wrong, because he's been amazing, and he's going to give Scolari a couple of things to think about, because he's been really good, and I think he deserves to be looked for Brazil as well. As for Liverpool itself, obviously they are short blanket, as we say in Portuguese.
What do they need?
Well, but first of all, they're going to need to sort out the biting boy over there, isn't it? What's he going to do? I mean, they're going to sell it. If they hang on to him, is he going to just kind of like drag his feet around? I don't know. And I still think they need to work something for the fact that Steven Gerrard perhaps is not going to be able to play 20, 25 games in a row.
What was your blanket analogy?
It's a short blanket. You know, if you cover your head, your feet are going to be in the cold. If you do the opposite, the opposite happens. It's a Brazilian metaphor. Squad depth, in my opinion, is the biggest problem for them.
Do most people have small blankets in Brazil?
No, it's a metaphor that sometimes it's cold, but you have a short blanket, so you can actually protect yourself properly.
Okay. Just before we finish part one, producer Ben has just said, could we compare Kolo Touré and Hulk's backsides in terms of size?
You know, the Hulk's backside has a Facebook page in Brazil, or appreciation side. Women in Brazil are mad about his butt. Yeah, he is a sex symbol, believe me or not.
Is there a Mr. Butt competition in Brazil? Or is it just
Brazilian women like butts. It's really funny because Brazilian men like butts, but Brazilian women like butts too. So, you know, and apparently Hulk's got like a top 10 something that during the Confederations Cup, I had like fellow journalists, female journalists calling me, when are you guys going to do some article on Hulk's butt? And the day you see me writing about somebody's butt, shoot me, because it's an alien that might have taken over my body and said, I'm not going to do this kind of thing. Having said that, the guy is really pumped up.
So what we need to do is start a Facebook page for Kolo Touré's backside.
Eden Hazard has quite a big backside, a deceptively big, wide backside.
It's like a pear.
Yeah, he's very sort of broad.
That's actually a Hulk attribute. The way he's very strong, etc. He can protect his both his ass just like King Kenny used to do.
And Mark Hughes, obviously.
Sparky United player.
Should be a Championship manager, shouldn't it? I mean, it should be one of the attributes under 20. Aggression, national fitness, arse, 20. Right, look, that was part one. In part three, we'll talk to Sid Lowe, who is currently in a meeting with the Spanish sports minister. So in part two, in place of Sid, the rest of the Premier League and a Capital One Cup update. That'll keep you listening. Right, welcome to part two of Football Weekly. Let's talk about the rest of the Premier League. It wasn't very exciting. Although Arsenal, the crisis is officially over at Arsenal after they battered Fulham 3-1?
I think you can, yeah, because they're going to qualify for the Champions League group stages tonight when they beat Fenerbahce on aggregate. They may not, and we'll probably beat them in this game as well. So, crisis is over. They still need to buy some players, though.
Did we write them off too soon? Did we ever write them off? I was trying to be sensationalist after week one.
The thing with Arsenal is that there's this sort of long sort of...
Just tell us how you feel, James.
the issues there have been sort of kind of drip-drabbing for some time now. And so, yeah, I think there have been various tipping points. The Bradford game, the Blackburn game... The Villa game seemed to, again, sort of like, I think it's all compounded by, the summer big proclamations made that, they escalated their financial capacity, and yet they haven't bought anyone apart from Sonogo and Flamini, who's training with them or whatever. So I think until they do that, they're only ever one defeat away from, uproar. Do you know what I mean? I think they're not as bad a team as people make out. I think... Wenger has every faith in this team, and kind of quite rightly so for the way they perform in the second half last season. But they do need to add players, as Barry said, to make that jump in quality to qualify for that trophy of the, you know, the Champions League. So.
I read somewhere that their midfield actually looks like it has more balance when it's Ramsey, Cazola and Rizicki, and Wilshere isn't playing.
Or when Arteta isn't playing as well. I like Wilshere because I think he can carry the ball forward. He can you know, break through lines of midfield defence. I sometimes think Arteta that sometimes he gives a good tempo to the game, but sometimes it can be quite slow and quite make them quite predictable. But you know, that's my two pence.
Fernando, give me a one word feeling about Fulham.
Nah. With all due respect, you know, cool. I hope they do well. I think Joe is a great manager for them, and they're consistently punching, I think, above their weight, even though they spent quite a considerable amount of money in reinforcements. But I'd like to address something in regards to Arsenal, is that they also relied upon pedestrian performances from their direct rivals. I mean, it's unlikely that Liverpool, Spurs, and even Chelsea are going to be so lame this season as they were last season. So I think the problem lies in the long term for Arsenal. Perhaps with a stretched squad, this could be a problem. Another thing is, if they get a bad group in the Champions League and they don't manage to escape from it, which is quite possible given how this competition is tough these days, then the crisis is going to come back again. I don't think it's over. It's over for now, and I think that a lot of people were immediately declaring them relegation candidates, which is bad. It's ludicrous. They're still a big club. But I don't think the worst is gone, because this is a long season. The minute they have a serious injury, this could all go, you know, tits up.
The next most exciting thing that happened over the weekend was a fracas at the Sunderland Team Hotel before the Southampton game. It finished 1-1, if you didn't know
the
that.
Fracas? What was the game?
Have you, the fracas, have you ever been involved in a... If you said one of those words, if you keep saying it, it makes no sense, but have you ever been involved in a fracas at a hotel, anyone?
I've seen a fracas at a hotel. I don't get involved in fracas. I would be under the table. Crawling towards the door.
What was the fracker about?
I was just at a wedding. Drink. People were drunk and didn't like each other, so they had a fracker. It was like organised dancing or whatever. Now we'll have the fracker.
Well, what defines a fracker? What makes a fracker different from a fight? Is that only two punches?
I think a fracker, the fight it ends before the fight starts, doesn't it?
Okay, so the okay people cool it off brigade comes in.
There's a bit of pushing, maybe a lean in with the head like the Hull City striker, but no actual
thrown furniture, do you reckon?
I think that's not a frack anymore. That's almost that's like Led Zeppelin coming to town, something like that.
That's a rumble, isn't it?
But anyway, what happened in the so-called fracas?
Do you remember, Barry?
Paolo Di Canio and his staff were having a late meeting, and then they were going up to their rooms, and some drunk wedding guests who were attending a wedding in the same hotel, and they were Southampton fans, I think started jeering them, and there was a bit of a set too. But the thing I found quite funny was Paolo Di Canio sort of said that he had been, you know, I was behind my staff shouting at them and sort of conveying the impression that he was doing that thing, you know, where you go, hold me back, while secretly cowering behind his assistants, trying to avoid trouble. So I think it sounds like it was something and nothing.
What's up, Fernando?
I mean, is it top flight manager? Is he going to get, like, annoyed by drunk people screaming here in the hotels now?
Well, I don't think he was particularly annoyed, but the police were called, but no arrests were made.
I'm one of the guys here who defends that supporters are not entitled to do everything they want just because they pay the bloody ticket or their Sky subscription. I think if you go to a ground and start saying things about somebody's mother or her supposed activities in the red district, I mean, you're going to annoy somebody. So that when I'm a huge defender of the Cantona Kung Fu kick. But on the other hand, you just can't get worked out by somebody jeering you. I mean, you're a public persona. I mean, especially the kind of, he's in this huge image transformation thing after the whole, you know, political convictions thing, and then he's going to get involved in a wedding? It's not even... It wasn't even in the wedding. It was like, oh, yeah, in this Premier Inn thing. Yeah.
I think Barry's fracas was at the wedding, wasn't it? Or was this a wedding? What would a Brazilian manager do, Fernando, in this situation?
Ah, don't get me started, dude.
Pull a gun out.
They would probably be drinking at the wedding with people.
Lots of bums everywhere.
Okay, does anyone have anything interesting to say on Stoke 2, Palace 1?
No. There has been speculation that Ian Holloway is going to get sacked.
Really?
And already? Replaced by either Neil Warnock or Alan Pardew. It would be strange, but he does seem to be under a huge strain and to be showing signs of possibly not being in the best of health. So I hope he's okay. But he seems to be having an awful lot of difficulty trying to buy the players he wants. And he has said during the off-season that it's been the most stressful time of his life.
And he's also come out and saying, I'm going to be uber serious.
Yeah, well, I mean,
Or was that a misquoted?
I don't know. I heard he said it. I didn't hear his exact quote, but he does have a bit of a reputation as being a bit of a clown. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I've always found him very entertaining. The only slight problem I have with him is if you're at a match in which he's involved, his post-match press conference, he's asked a question and then he talks for like 25 minutes without drawing breath, and you have to kind of go and write your report to a tight deadline, but you don't want to get up and leave, A, because it's generally quite entertaining, and B, because it's rude to get up and walk away from someone when they're talking to you. So, yeah, perhaps you should just have shorter press conferences and everything will be okay.
Everton 0-0 against West Brom. Nicholas Anelka coming out saying wanting to retire. Turns out, actually, those headlines are... The first headlines that came out were pretty insensitive, given when we found out the truth about his agent dying. Which is obviously really sad, and without sounding trite, it actually puts West Ham in a problem, doesn't it?
West Brom.
It puts West Brom in a bit of a problem, needing a centre-forward, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. It would be nice if he could let them know what his final decision is going to be one way or the other, so they can get a replacement in. But you also have to have sympathy for him, because he's clearly lost a very dear friend and is upset. And, you know, maybe in a couple of weeks... He will change his mind.
Everton also probably need someone up front, don't they?
Jelovic went on that sort of long kind of drought last season after being, you know, scoring with every... You know, being very prolific when he first arrived at Everton, scoring, you know, practically with one touch every time. Went quiet a bit. Kone's obviously come in from Wigan. I think you should maybe give him... a bit of a chance, but I mean, it's been quite interesting sort of looking at how Stoke have changed under Mark Hughes, i.e. not very much, and how much Everton are changing under Martinez. They seem to be dominating possession. I think Everton have had more possession in the league so far this season than any other team in the league. So I mean, they are obviously changing things, but more demonstrably than Hughes at Stoke, anyway.
Is there a crisis at Newcastle?
Oh, there will be if they lose that guy, isn't it? Goodbye. But the rest of that, I don't see anything differently from any other team that's going through a bad start of the season. Again, three rounds gone, I think it's a bit early to talk about crises.
It's good to have some crises, though.
I know, it's very good for us in the media, but I just think that sometimes it's just a matter of adjustment. I really don't think why they should be so concerned as people are saying.
And can we congratulate Hull on winning, Barry?
Congratulations, Hull. Their win, which I suspect they possibly won't have many wins, kind of clashed with the Challenge Cup final, and everyone I know from Hull was at that rather than the football, including several football fans. So, yeah.
How many people do you know in Hull, Barry?
I know quite a few, actually, because one of my neighbours, Eddie, is from Hull, as is his mate,
just
Selby.
A figure, like a figure.
Seven.
I'm from Hull.
Eight.
All right, let's talk about the Capital One Cup. Interesting piece in The Guardian by David Conn about Notts County, now managed by Chris Kiwomya. And I'd completely forgotten about those years, the crazy years they had with Ericsson and Sol Campbell and wasting billions of pounds and it generally being insane. They go to Liverpool. We obviously would like some upsets. Can we see one happening?
I could see the MK Dons beating Sunderland.
At Sunderland?
Yeah.
Because?
Because this is exactly the kind of game Sunderland would lose.
If the big sides throw up those famous, you know, mixed teams and they just feel like, okay, a bunch of school kids and the kid man to play, they might be upset. In full force, I don't see that.
Would it be
happen.
The Millwall kit man? Because he might turn up.
The Millwall kit man forgot the kit. He only had... I mean, I don't know how many things a kit man has to do, but you would think the kit is a pretty important detail. Morecambe Newcastle, that's the upset, surely, isn't it?
Could be.
They have a collection in their history of upsets. Every time you research a cup upsets, Newcastle's name comes up.
Is there a case that the Capital One Cup is actually more important now than it was 5-10 years ago for the big clubs?
No, it's a brilliant excuse if you don't have any trophies. Yeah, we're going to have that, and I'm pretty sure that Arsenal would have loved to win the one they lost to Birmingham, for example. But I think the cups have generally been devalued. Unless you start giving
Champions League place for the FA Cup, that's what we should give, shouldn't we?
Sorry,
Champions League place for the FA Cup.
Well, that's what happens in a lot of leagues in South America. A lot of cups give you a place in the Libertadores, which is the Champions League thing. You bring the interest. On the other hand, you punish a team who's put a fantastic season to finish in the top four, and especially if it's a team without the same purchasing power of the oligarch teams. And you kind of punish them for a knockout competition that technically is not as hard as a league in terms of squad management. But you can have both. That's the only thing.
I think because you've got new managers at each of the sort of big clubs, and you've got a manager who desperately needs a trophy in the sort of top four, then they might take the League Cup more seriously than they have in the past. Yeah, I think Moyes kind of needs to win silverware. I think Pellegrini would like Mourinho when he first came to Chelsea. He made a real point out of winning the first competition available to him, which was the League Cup, to try and start getting a winning mentality going through the squad. So, with all that in mind, perhaps we won't see the sort of upsets we saw last season, where Bradford went on that incredible run.
Good. Well, that's enough for part two, if you ask me. Thanks. It's lucky you're here, James, adding some sense and normality to this podcast. That's it for part two. In part three, we talk to Sid in Spain.
If you're looking to get in shape, build your fitness and improve your well-being, then all you need is a decent pair of running shoes, a bit of determination, and the brand new Guardian Guide to Running podcasts. Our 8-week programme will transform you from complete running novice to someone who's able to run for 30 minutes non-stop. And if you're a more experienced runner and want to take things to the next level, then we've also got 4 special runs for you in our Advanced Running Guides. The Guardian Guide to Running podcasts, available now on iTunes and theguardian.com.
Welcome to part 3 of Football Weekly. Let's talk about the rest of Europe. I'll give you some facts about France. Marseille are top, the only team with a 100% record. They won 1-0 at Valenciennes. Monaco dropped their first points with a 0-0 draw home to Toulouse. Monaco and Marseille play each other next week, by the way. And during their first two games, PSG got their first win, 2-1 away at Nantes, with goals from an old Napoli strike force of Cavani and Lavezzi, which sets us up nicely for a first look at Serie A. James, talk us about it. Big shock with AC Milan losing 2-1 away to Hellas Verona.
Yeah, that was the big story of the weekend, I guess, apart from Higuain falling off a boat and cutting his jaw quite badly.
Tell us about the Higuain falling off a boat.
Well, Napoli played on Sunday night, first official game for Rafa Benitez. They won 3-0. They were very, very impressive. Sort of lived up to the expectation after selling Cavani and then spending all of the money that they got from that. Higuain was given a sort of day off. He decided to take a boat, go to Capri, which is a lovely island in the Gulf of Naples, and was preparing to dive off a boat, did dive off the boat, and went headfirst into a rock, apparently. So he had to be taken to hospital. Luckily, by the sounds of things, he's just needed 8 stitches along his jaw and some stitches above his eyebrow.
Has he dived into a rock?
He's lucky, man. He could have actually died.
Well, there was
or
sort of
being paralyzed.
Yeah, there are sort of conjectures to whether he dived into the rock or he was swimming and he went to stand on a rock and slipped. But the photos in the Italian papers today suggest that he, certainly in those in Gazette, suggests that he dived and then came up and was like, oh. But he seems okay, apparently. He was discharged And fortunately, considering they've spent, what, 38 million on him, he will be at training today. But yeah, aside from that, yeah, Napoli were probably the most impressive team of the weekend. Milan lost. They've lost on the opening day of the last two seasons, two promoted teams. First time, I think that's happened since the 30s. There's a lot going into that game about Balotelli because Hellas Verona's fans, a section of them at least, are kind of quite far right. There's been some very serious racist incidents there in the past, but they instead chose to take the higher ground and clap with irony whenever he reached touched the ball, and instead of insulting him whenever he fell over or was fouled, they just shouted Mario, Mario, which was
just ironic racism.
Sort of. Well, it wasn't racism, but it was. They were showing all the journalists that they're not racists, that they can be quite funny. Well, it depends on what your interpretation of funny is. But the story out of that was Luca Toni, who's 36. He scored twice, two headers, both winning goals, which is great. He dedicated them to his baby girl because, sadly, last year his wife and his long term partner and they lost. They were expecting their first child and they lost it, and so for him it was kind of coming full circle after a very difficult year, which is a great story because he's a great guy, Luca Toni.
16th club. What's the Italian for journeyman? The Wayne Biggins of Italian football.
We call gypsies in Brazil because they go around. Mm-hmm. You know, the old kind of gypsy in the caravan. So Cigano is a player who goes to many clubs, and the players don't like. No, I'm not a Cigano, because it is often mistaken as being like a mercenary, which is not true. I mean, footballers, they have to move around. I really do have respect for this guy as well, because I've seen him playing. And he was amazing on his prime. But I think his performance also asks a lot of questions about AC Milan's defence and what they're going to do, because they're relying too much upon Mario, aren't they?
Yeah, well, Milan in the Champions League playoff on Wednesday night. They went to PSV last week and drew 1-1. So that's kind of very much in the balance. And considering they've gone on this sort of self-sustainability drive, the owner's not prepared to put any money in. It's very important that they qualify to get the 30 million that qualification for the Champions League would do, so they can then maybe improve the defence or buy a striker from now and the end of the transfer window.
Carlos Tevez got a debut goal. Juve 1-1 at Sampdoria. Are they looking good?
Yeah, Mancini was at the stands because obviously he's a Samp legend, and yeah, Tevez was asked about that afterwards, and he kind of looked like, oh, Christ, Mancini's here. But yeah, I mean, they bought Tevez essentially because they're a team that creates lots of chances but doesn't necessarily finish as many as they doesn't finish them all, and they needed a go-to goal scorer, and Tevez has been that guy so far. He scored in both of his games for them so far this season, so yeah, they looked very much like champions.
Fiorentina, Calgary, Lazio all had home wins. Is that interesting? Was expected.
It is, because I mean, a lot of people think the strongest team in Italy got stronger, i.e. Juventus last year, but the competition has as well, because Napoli have spent a lot of money. Fiorentina have bought Mario Gomez, and back in January they bought Giuseppe Rossi, who scored. He hasn't scored since, I think, October 2011. He had two serious knee injuries, so it's great to see him back on the score sheet. Many people think that they could be a dark horse contender for the title this year.
All right, cheers, James. Thanks for that on Italy. Let's talk about Spain. Sid is meeting the Spanish government for some reason, but he's written a good article about Gareth Bale on the back of The Guardian today. Barry, can you summarise?
Real Madrid won 1-0 against Granada last night. If Gareth Bale had been playing, they might have won 3-0 or 4-0.
And Benzema scored, and he's not going to Arsenal. Barcelona had a narrow away win, 1-0 at Malaga.
Apparently Mesut Ozil had a hissy fit last night. He was taken off during that game.
Did
against
he throw
Granada.
A shirt?
Or
did
I don't think
did
so.
He left the dressing room looking angry, but then he always looks angry. He looks like an angry fish. And then people immediately saying, oh yeah, he might be leaving Real, etc. But I still think it's a load of baloney. He's been linked to Arsenal already, mm-hmm. Which I think is a bit of gun jumping. But the most interesting thing in Spain for me was this recent admission by Martino that Barcelona will play with a makeshift defense for the whole season. I mean, for the whole season, at least until the winter transfer. That's quite interesting in European terms as well, because we did see how much he punished them to not to have like proper cover for the center backs. The guy was saying, Tata Martino, oh yes, I'm really happy that Carlos Puyol is back. Carlos Puyol is probably going to get injured when he's needed or something like that. And again, they're going to have to even improvise Adriano there. Should be interesting. For the Spanish league, I don't think so, because, you know, Barcelona and Real are so ahead in terms of money. But in the Champions League, I think there's all to be played for if the teams go this way.
Right, let's finish with some Twitter questions. Let's go quick fire. I'll start with you, James, for no particular reason. Richard Poole asks, Wayne Rooney playing for himself or the team?
With the team.
Jean-Pascal Struer says, this is for you, Barry, what do you think about Mourinho's attitude towards other managers?
I think it's very foolish.
Gollop writes, I want to know what Barry got in his GCSEs.
I didn't do GCSEs because I went through the Irish education system, where I did the Intercert, is kind of the equivalent, except it's really more difficult, and I got 7 B's and 3 C's, I think.
Max writes, I'm a Newcastle fan, could you cheer me up?
It's going to be worse for Sunderland.
And finally, Uzair writes, when's Jimbo coming back? Thursday.